Hi, I'm Britt Garner.
And I'm Rob Spall.
Welcome to Nature Insight.
Speed dating with the future.
We are so excited to be back with our second episode of season two, introducing you to more exceptional people who care deeply about our relationship and impact on the natural world.
And they're all part of the wider Ipbiss community.
So in our past episodes, we've talked about a number of different Ipbiss assessments, the global assessment, the values assessment, and there are even a few more to come this season. As an Ipbiss outsider, I don't think I ever actually grasped the true extent and kind of work that goes into each of them.
And I'm guessing you're not the only one who feels that way, Britt. From the outside, Ipbiss assessments can seem quite mysterious, really complex, and unless you work on one, you don't often get a chance to explore how they're put together.
Right, which is why last week we tried to give you an idea of what it was like being a fellow on one of the assessments.
And this week, I had the chance to chat to a close friend who was also the amazing technical force behind the Ipbiss Global Assessment Report, Hien Ngo. Hien had the massive task of coordinating the work of hundreds of experts from every corner of the globe to deliver the global assessment over 3 years.
I have to say, the idea of the global assessment coming together in just 3 years is pretty incredible when you think about how much it contained.
The labors of Hercules. In the interest of getting some new nature insights, I was keen to also ask Hien about what goes on behind the scenes, peeking behind the curtain at the process and the people. But before I asked Hien to reveal her insider secrets, I wanted to know what influenced her to get involved in this kind of work in the first place. Here's a clue.
Well, I attended my undergraduate in Vancouver, and I took a biology course when I was like 18 or 19. It was intro biology. And the professor of that class was the lead researcher for bees, honeybees. And I was the only one to have read the first book he had in his curriculum. So he was like, you, please apply for a position in my lab. And I did. And I got the job. And after that, it was, snowballed from there. You cannot work with something like honeybees or bees and not just fall in love with the animal, and then everything about it. So,
if I'm not mistaken, I think you've had at least a hand in all of the Ipbiss assessments that have been published so far, right from the very start, which makes you quite unique and quite uniquely placed to help us understand them. So perhaps we can start with some real basics for our listeners. What is an Ipbiss assessment?
If you Google assessment reports or biodiversity assessments, you will get a ton of hits. The difference between Ipbiss is really it's the top experts in the world working really hard to bring decision makers the top, best, most current information. We look at status and trends and future projections on any one topic. So if they say species X are declining in X region, then I have more confidence as a decision maker. Well, hundreds of experts have weighed in and they've said, this is well established. Let's move forth with making some change or policy or regulations to protect species X.
Who are they aimed at, really?
I would like to think that they're aimed at everybody. So I would like my family to be able to pick up the summary for policymakers, read it, and say like, oh, I didn't know about that. Or scientists to pick it up and really read key findings and find them credible. But also the main audience are decision makers, especially when it comes to the summary for policymakers. I wanted them to feel it was their document. They could take it home. They could scale down some of the policy options, not recommendations, to a national level and say, okay, what can we do with this information? Since we know these are the trends, this is happening in our biome, in our country, what do we need to look at in terms of gaps? What do we need to look at in terms of priorities, drivers? That's the end goal here.
So, I mean, Ipbiss brings all of these experts and all of this evidence and all this data together. It synthesizes it and it presents it to these decision makers. Why do the decision makers take any more note of this than they would take of other research reports that are published every year?
It stands out from all the other assessments because it's developed with government national focal points. It's co-produced with stakeholders. and they get buy-in from the very beginning. From point one, everybody gets a say about what's important, what policy-relevant questions and assessment will answer. In addition, IPBES has a conceptual framework which other assessment reports do not. And it really brings in other knowledge systems. This kind of different knowledge systems, I think, is really becoming visible that it should be incorporated. For example, with the Climate Change Convention, they now have a local communities and Indigenous peoples platform, which is also recognizing other knowledge systems. IPBES really was an innovator and pioneer of this, bringing different knowledge systems in. I could go on about why IPBES assessments are different.
Is it making an impact? Does the work that IPBES assessments make and publish have an impact?
You, of all people, would know about that because, you know, you, as part of the comms team, as heading the comms division at IPBES, would know about this. I remember that after the IPBES Global Assessment, you were coming into my office actually quite a lot to say, guess what? We got mentioned by X, Y, and Z. And at one point, I think you came in and said, Jimmy Kimmel mentioned us. And my response to you was like, can we get Trevor Noah? And then you walked out like, oh, you're never happy. But then you came in like the next day and you're like, Trevor Noah mentioned the Global Assessment.
We were on the Daily Show, yep.
So in terms of the Global Assessment, and you can follow up, Rob, did have impact. The pollination assessment, which I worked on, also had impact both in policy, in public awareness, in driving curriculum, driving research funding, all of these things. So I would say a resounding yes. The motivating part and why I kept working with them was because I believed in them. That sounds so cheesy, but like, I believe they're making an impact. Yeah.
You're exactly right, Hien. I mean, one of the things that I love about working with and for IPBES is the vast variety of impact that we're able to track of the work that we've been doing. Looking at everything, as you mentioned, from the level of the meetings of the governments of the G7 and the G20, taking specific decisions that cite IPBES as the motivation for making some of these decisions, all the way down to very much individual level. I mean, you might remember we tracked some of the impacts with some youth who decided that they were going to go and really have a look at species extinction because of our reports. We had a grandfather in New Zealand who was protesting outside the New Zealand Parliament as a result of one of the IPBES reports. It's fantastic to be able to see that. Just shifting gears slightly here, I know that even one IPBES assessment can be an exhausting 3-year process. Over the years of working on assessments, you didn't take a lot of time to take a breather because they came one after the other. But I believe that recently you've had a chance to take a bit of a break from assessments, worked a bit with the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, but you've also had a bit of time off as well. What have you been doing?
These last couple of years, as you know, has been kind of a restraint for traveling. So at the first opportunity, I went to Spain with my sister. We went to Sevilla and stayed in the lower southern part of Spain, going around to Cadiz, Ronda, and Malaga. We went to a football match in which Sevilla beat Wolfsburg. Sorry, German fans. Sevilla, Sevilla, Sevilla.
So let me ask you this. What do you think would be more difficult logistically to arrange, like a major international football match or a 3-year international assessment?
A 3-year assessment in terms of logistics, every day it was a slog, but a happy slog. Does that make sense?
Like, it does.
Every day you have a growing list of things to do and you might cross off one or two. And I looked at the assessment as more than work. So you're doing it into the night. You're doing it on the weekend because it's not a 9-to-5. You cannot look at assessments. And the experts did not look at assessments this way either. I mean, they were doing it on top of their day jobs. And I always remembered that because all of the experts in assessment processes are doing this work pro bono because they believe in the conservation of nature. So just having that in mind, knowing that they're doing all this extra work, you have to work harder than them just to pay, you know, your homage to them.
What are the typical stages that an IPBES assessment goes through? I mean, there are so many of them, but could you walk us through perhaps the highlights of the 3-year process?
Whew, that is, okay, so what are the stages so that I don't bore the listeners? Okay.
Yes.
The first stage of an assessment is that governments and the observers tell IPBES what should be the next best thing to do. And then once there's agreement, there's a scoping report. The scoping report is like an outline. That's how I like to talk about it. And this outline or paper needs to be worked on by multiple people, and it needs to be then approved by governments again. So it's almost like a term paper for university. You want to run the outline by your prof. Your prof says, great, let's go on this, before you can start working on it. Otherwise, at the end of the semester, you might just fail the course because you wrote a paper on World War II and the class was on the Spanish Inquisition, you know, like...
And nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
and everybody will be disappointed. So you need that outline. And then once that's approved, then you get your team up and running. You get the experts on board. And the expert selection is not in a simple process. It involves the nomination of experts by governments and organizations. There are several iterations of discussion by our multidisciplinary expert panel members, the MEP. And then just to simplify, so I don't again drone on, then you have a series of author meetings yearly, reviews by governments and experts, and then you produce this great body of work, and the global assessment was like 1,150 pages. It's really a mad dash to make sure that you're producing the highest quality product.
You mentioned reviews. So the experts have produced this document. Who reviews it? What do you mean by review?
There's two large review cycles that are done with every assessment process. And this is open to governments and experts, it says, but technically anyone can sign up to review. So if you are a researcher in a government, or you are a university professor or student, graduate student, anybody that has expertise, you can sign up to register. And then you can review the documents, submit your comments, and then those will be compiled, and every single comment will be looked at by other authors. And they will respond to every one of the comments to tell you how your comment has been addressed. In addition to the two large reviews, there's one last government review of the summary for policymakers before the meeting in which it's approved.
Tell us a little bit about that last step. When it comes to the governments, it's been through this three-year process, and now the governments have to have a look at the summary, word for word, line by line. What is that like?
So it's a process where at a large meeting, all of the governments that have been part of the process from the beginning, they come together and they take a final look at this summary for policymakers, which we call an SPM. It's normally around 16,000 to 20,000 words. It includes figures and captions, which has to be negotiated line by line. 137 governments plus have to agree on this one sentence, this one, you know, word. And then scientists have to weigh in and say yes or no, or how about this, how about that. And it's a real crafting of the final product. And sometimes I think about it like if you've ever asked your group of friends, like, hey guys, are you hungry? Where do you want to eat? And there's like eight of them. It takes like a good hour to decide. And sometimes you just don't end up going anywhere. But can you imagine, you know, 137 governments together? It's a long process. And so I think for the IPBES Global Assessment, it was something upwards to around like 45 hours of negotiations. We only have 4 or 5 days. So 45 hours over the 4 or 5 days is quite long days.
So not a lot of people get to sit in on those negotiations because they're closed negotiations. The media are not in there. One of the ones that I remember, I think you and I were both there for that, was a delegation, and they'll remain nameless, grabbing a power nap in the aisle of the meeting room in the early hours of the morning. And so I think it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and looking down the aisle and seeing people actually sleeping in the aisle because it had been such an incredibly long marathon.
Oh, no. And the number of delegates towards midnight that are sleeping at their microphones, you're just like,
which is in no way in any way meant to be, you know, criticism. When you've been working from 8 o'clock in the morning through to midnight, it's exhausting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same for the secretariat. I know for myself, and this is probably no surprise to anyone who was within a 2 meter radius of me, I never showered the night before the approval because I was up trying to get the document ready, right? Like I'm there, I'm in some back room by myself working straight through in order to get that text to the editors. And like, there's no time to shower. There's no time to eat.
The scent of success.
Well, yeah, if you want to call it that, that makes it sound better than it actually was. And normally after plenaries, I crash. I sleep for like 16 or 20 hours straight afterwards because the adrenaline is just so much. You're responsible for a lot.
So, Hien, when we talk to people who are outside the IPBES process and we mention that the author meetings and sometimes the plenary sessions happen in some rather exotic locations like Medellin or Ushuaia or Cape Town, it can sound really exciting. When you travel for assessments to these incredible places, do you and the experts get to see much of the places or mainly just the meeting rooms?
For plenaries, nobody sees the outside world. During the plenary, I mean, they're like in a basement somewhere and I'm like, you know, hovering around them like, but for authors meetings, it's a little bit different. So I basically have authors locked in a series of rooms working on text. And then these authors give 100% like effort and they're doing it pro bono, like I've mentioned. So when they're at a really grueling first authors meeting, let's say, or second authors meeting, in an exotic location, I usually try to give a bit of a break, like maybe a few hours in the afternoon for a culture break. I try to really make an effort to have some people spend some time together outside of a meeting room. And actually, they've mentioned to me sometimes the best ideas come when they're not in that meeting room looking at a whiteboard, looking at a screen. They're just chit-chatting, looking at some penguins, and then something will come up. But it's really... It's a tough process. And if they have a small pocket in which, you know, they can get a bit of a benefit from the landscape or nature, I mean, of course, that's part of the process as well.
With this kind of intergovernmental process, it's sometimes criticized by people outside the process as governments negotiating the science. And it's usually said in a very negative way that, you know, governments are somehow able to influence what the experts have said. Is this fair criticism?
So that's a complete false statement, I would say. And I think that it's a very catchy title. Science is never negotiated or changed by governments unless there's some validation or evidence to it. So science always comes first, no matter what. When governments review the documents, they provide comments, but by no means does the core author group have to take up those comments. They read those comments. They read every single one of the 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 comments, and they address them, but they don't have to take them up. So they can say, your comment is great. We will look into this. And then if it's valid, they'll make a small revision to the text. But if it's not valid, they can just have a response that explains why the comment was not taken up. So the scientists are there to ensure that the words and the sentences are not being changed to diverge from the actual meaning, their actual findings in the underlying text.
Hien, there's been a recurring theme in the Nature Insight podcast last season, particularly the episodes, that's already coming back in this season. And it's about looking at nature in terms of both costs and value. With an IPBES assessment, what does it cost and who actually pays the bills for an IPBES assessment?
This is an interesting question because the benefits, the value, far outweigh the costs. That's why we get, you know, people wanting to continue to contribute, wanting to sign up as an expert, wanting to participate in some way. So I will say for the costs, all of the experts that were involved in the assessment, I can't tell you, they spent weekends, holidays, nights working on this. I think I did a calculation for the stakeholder day. So there was 145 experts involved in the global assessment. And I took an average of how many hours per week the co-chair spent, how many hours a week the coordinating lead author spent, and so on. And I calculated over 153,000 hours of time it took to develop the global assessment, which translated to over 17 years.
Over 17 years of total time investment to arrive at a single report.
Yeah, I think at the time I said something like we birthed a teenager, and everyone was like, or an adult almost, and everyone was not so happy about my comment at that time because it was during the plenary and we were all tired. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot.
I think a lot of people look at budget lines and they look at something like an assessment and they see it costs, I don't know, 3 million or 2 million US dollars. And then you really have to then say, but that's just pure input costs without looking at the investment of all of these experts. You multiply it by 17 years of expert time and the average value of one of the world's leading experts' time, which is donated free of charge to this work. And the amount of value that you extract from an assessment like an IPBIS assessment is literally exponentially greater than the input costs in terms of financial input costs. What is the importance of the end result, the assessment report?
The importance of the end result is that it makes a difference. So that's very generic, but a lot of the reports out there and assessments, quote unquote, that are being done without government buy-in. They're being done not through a transparent method with authoritative top experts. And then you have it taking up a lot of time, costs, and money. And then you have the readership, it's very low, and it basically collects dust. My fear always was to be involved in a project where you're producing a dust collector. What I wanted for all of the IPBES assessments that I worked on was for it to be very accessible to the public, to all sectors, to nonprofit sectors, business sectors, trade decision makers, you have educators, you have farmers. I wanted them to be able to read this. So the reason that people stuck with it was because it was worth it.
He and I agree. And really, also big thanks to you for the massive amount of work you've put into IPBIS assessments over the years, but especially also for your time and for sharing your insights with our listeners today.
Thanks, Rob.
You know, I've heard before that you shouldn't ask what's in the sausage, you should just enjoy it. But in the case of these assessments, I feel like really understanding how that metaphorical sausage is made just contributes to how unbelievably cool and complex it is. You know, in this situation with this metaphor, it's way more chefs than you would think and thousands of more ingredients than you could ever imagine. But looking into the process, I mean, it really does help to understand the importance and the value of this work.
When I was speaking to Hien, and I was part of these processes myself for a number of years, it really hammered home to me just how much input goes into creating these final products. You talked about the idea of the sausage and the chefs and the ingredients. I think if there was one takeaway from almost everything Hien was talking about, it was that the quality of the ingredients going into the IPBIS assessment sausage really resulted in the outcomes, resulted in the value of the IPBIS assessment, the global assessment particularly.
Well, and just to think about the figure of 17 years worth of experts' time, I mean, when this thing was put together in 3 years, that just tells me how many people were working together at the same time to make this happen.
And something that so many people just can't believe when they hear about the work that IPBIS does is that that's work that's donated free of charge, entirely pro bono, by the world's leading experts to try and get these assessments written and to place this evidence on record for the decision makers.
You know, with all of this being said, especially the bit about pro bono, I feel like you owe these people sausage. I'm thinking like a gift basket, perhaps, a sheath. I don't know what the collective noun is for a gift of sausage, but it's just amazing. And in a way restores my faith in this idea of not only collaboration, but collaboration for something other than self, for species outside of our own and our connection to them and habitats that we all share. And, you know, the importance here is in that end result and it making a difference.
Yeah. Again, so many people who think about global assessments or science assessments assume that they really are aimed only at governments and at policymakers and at people in high office. And I think the reality of the work that IPBIS does is we really try to create end products that have relevance and value to every person in their lives, in their homes, in their communities, every day, to try and make better decisions, better informed decisions about nature.
I liked how Hien was mentioning accessibility, and that did remind me, you know, where can the public read these reports, Rob?
So anybody who's interested in finding any of the IPBIS reports or documents can find them free of charge and freely available on the IPBIS website, www.ipbes.net.
And in all of the IPBIS work, you know, clearly it's experts and the governments who are working together and mixing and crafting these elements. But it was also so great to hear from one of the members of the IPBIS secretariat. You know, so much of the work that happens seems to really be behind the scenes, making that end result possible. And then it's our awesome job to add to this entire communication and make sure the world gets to hear about it even more.
Britt, the members of the IPBIS Secretariat may be small in number, but the amount of work that goes in and the impact that it's able to achieve, I think, speaks for itself. So again, as a member of the Secretariat myself, I can tell you it's an incredibly rewarding task to be part of an assessment and an incredibly important task to be part of helping people make better choices about nature.
Absolutely.
That's it for this episode of Nature Insight, Speed Dating with the Future. I'm Rob Spall.
And I'm Britt Garner.
Big thanks to Hien and Go for lifting the lid on the huge amount of work that goes into coordinating and delivering IPBIS assessments.
Next week, I'll be looking ahead to the IPBIS Assessment of the Sustainable Use of Wild Species with co-chair and biodiversity scientist John Donaldson, as well as Yvonne Higuero, the Secretary General of CITES. That's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora.
Britt, it's going to be great to get an insight into the really valuable work that they've been doing for the past 4 years, particularly in advance of the launch of that report later this year in July.
Absolutely. And as someone who has studied this academically and also communicated it in the education sphere, it's just such an honor to be able to speak to experts whose work in sustainability is held in such high regard. I cannot wait.
In the meantime, you can learn more about IPBIS's work on www.ipbis.net or on any of our social media channels. Just search for @IPBIS. That's @IPBES. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with episode 3.